Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Well, I guess we have some things to complain about today, huh? We have some things to nitpick on. What better way than to provide Nitpick Tuesday for the listeners of American Airlines Patriots.com radio. Welcome, everybody, inside Patriots Playbook for Tuesday. I wish it were under different circumstances. Obviously, it is not, as the Pats drop one in overtime on Sunday to the Denver Broncos. I'll be dead honest with you here. I'm just as crushed as everybody else. I thought that that was as much of a slam dunk opportunity for the Patriots to get a win over, you know, what obviously now we certainly know to be a quality opponent and to, you know, kind of continue to build toward, the off week and thinking about maybe getting there at 6-1 and then, you know, start another tough stretch after the bye week and, you know, kind of just picking right back up where you left off. And obviously, this team still has a tremendous amount of work to do. I don't know that it's entirely fair to blame it all on Tom Brady. Although, I would say that nitpick number one today has to be Tom Brady. It can't be any other, way. Every other foible, every other mistake, every other problem, every other blown assignment, misplay, whatever, it pales in comparison, in my estimation, to the fact that the quarterback of the New England Patriots is not himself. Hasn't been himself all season long. And we're all still waiting. Now, can you see, is there a little bit of week-to-week improvement? Yeah, I think so. And he's getting gradually better, I think, week after week. But the mistakes that he makes are glaring because we're just not used to him making them, period. Fact is, that was Tom's first overtime loss in his career as a quarterback. I believe it's just his second loss ever leading a game at halftime and leading a game going into the fourth quarter. I believe it's just the second time he's ever lost. So, you know, is he human? Yes. Is he perfect? No, because humans aren't perfect. And so, shame on all of us for putting him up on that pedestal. That we do, and we all do, okay? We all do. We all put him on that pedestal. He's Tom Terrific. But I said this the other night on ESPN Radio. I did their all-night show on Sunday night into Monday morning for the holiday, those of you that had the Columbus Day holiday. Then don't get me started on some people that don't celebrate Columbus Day because Columbus was mean to the Indians. Good grief. If you were out discovering the new world and you saw someone hostile, what would you do? You'd protect yourself, okay? Sorry. I heard that argument the other day. They were doing that at Brown University. You want to change the name of the holiday from Columbus Day to Fall Weekend. What kind of crap is that? With all due respect to the Narragansetts and to the Wampanoags and to, okay, let me say this right here and right now. I have Comanche blood in me, all right? I am 1/16th Comanche because my grandmother was a quarter blood, was fully 1/4th Indian, American Indian. So, you know, that's the part of the country that I come from. I'm going off on the tangent here like I normally like to do, but I got to tell you, quite frankly, that one really bugged me, changing the name of the holiday. Anyway, I happen to have Monday off. I know many of you didn't, but that's fine. I heard an argument, and I guess Paul I backed it up a little bit with another pervading emotion or feeling coming from fans, is that Tom's lifestyle is clearly affecting his play. And I heard that actually Monday. Somebody emailed me that, I think, when I was doing the ESPN show, and I've just got to be thinking. It got me thinking. I'm like, could that really be the case? I mean, first of all, you or I don't know what his daily lifestyle is. We don't know. We only can imagine that it must be glamorous and full of paparazzi and, you know, here, there, and everywhere just because of who he is and because of who his wife is. You know, I'm willing to bet you dollars to donuts here, all right? And that's my league, okay? Dollars to donuts that his lifestyle most of the time is as mundane as yours and mine. Think about what his day is like here. He's probably up early in the morning. He commutes in on the highway here, gets to the stadium. He's probably watching film, videotape, by 7 o'clock. Then he's got meetings. Then he's got workouts. Then he's got more meetings. Then he's watching more tape. And he's probably here 12 to 15 hours a day. That'd be my guess.
You play to win the game.
That would be my guess, okay? So I don't think he's trying to do poorly, as some might suggest, or as some might insinuate. I think that's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. Now, I will admit that when he overthrew Moss, that's the first thing that came to my mind, okay? I'm human. A little too much partying last night, Tommy. Why'd you stay up late last night with Giselle? Overthrew him again. Sheesh. And then when he missed Welker on the slant route, hit him in the butt, I think it was, or in the bottom of the leg or something, you know, where Welker had a touchdown, easy sailing. He had beaten the seam of the defense. You could see on the instant replay, Welker's reaction was like, oh, my God. He threw his hands up in frustration at Brady on that one. That one just it sent me for a loop. It really did. That one hurt more than anything else. Because you know if it's anywhere close, Welker's going to get it. Wes Welker is quickly becoming, if he wasn't already, he's quickly becoming my favorite player on this team. Why? Because he's just, you know, balls out, for lack of a better phrase. He's just absolutely to the limit every time. Full tilt, full time, just like Teddy Bruschi was. Wes Welker's that way. Love that about the guy. Maybe we need a little more of that right now, and I don't think we need much. Brady needs to continue to follow through on his passes. He's still favoring the leg. I don't know how much longer that's going to take, but let's face it, it's been a couple of years now since that happened to Carson Palmer, and you could make an argument for Palmer just now getting back to the way he was before his injury. And look at what Cincinnati's doing at 4-1 now. Folks, we told you it was going to take this time. It was going to take time, and it was going to be painful along the way. Mentally, emotionally painful for fans, probably still physically painful for others, including Tom Brady. The fact that this team decided to go with two quarterbacks and not bring in a veteran as a third quarterback still is a puzzler to me. I guess they felt like they needed the help elsewhere, that they like enough of what they see out of a guy like Brian Hoyer. But to think that Brian Hoyer is going to actually come in and do a better job than Tom Brady in a given circumstance, I mean, you don't know football if you think. And again, I say that with all due respect to Brian, okay? He's a great young guy. He looks like he could be a very good quarterback. He's still developing, and I'm sure that, you know, heaven forbid something happened to Tom again, if he were to be thrown in there, I'm sure that he would give it his all, and he could probably hold his own. He doesn't have the experience Tom has. He doesn't have the experience of trying to lead a team from behind or a defensive end breathing down his neck. You can't underestimate that. If Brady were to go down and Hoyer were to get inserted, they'd still go out and find another quarterback. Okay, they would have to. So that's not even open for discussion here, okay? It's just not, because it's unrealistic and it's just stupid. It's just stupid. You're not thinking if you think that Hoyer should replace Brady. What we need is for Tom to spend more time actually on the practice field and Tom to work on, you know, the pocket collapsing around him and stepping up. This past Sunday against Denver, I didn't see Brady step up into the pocket, move up where he's supposed to. You know, when the rush collapses around you, quarterback's supposed to move up and in wherever the pocket allows you to move. I didn't see that from him. Now, I will tell you this. I thought the offensive line did a pretty solid job most of the game. I think they only got to him, what, once? I thought the offensive line did a great job on finding and chipping away at Elvis Dumervil and keeping him out of there. Of course, obviously, the fumble that that Brady gacked up in the second half was Vonnie Holiday, who came in and made a great play. He just made a great play. For the most part, the offensive line, the defensive backs, the running backs, and the tight ends, they did their job. That part of the game plan worked. The execution part of the game plan did not work. I'm real frustrated with the running game. I don't understand what it is about run blocking. I really don't. See, I've always been told, and from the offensive lineman that I know, and hey, I work with one. I call football games with an offensive lineman, Pete Brock, who obviously many of you will remember as being the starting center for the Patriots, Super Bowl 20 team in 85. And he said, you know, there's no doubt in his mind every offensive lineman he's ever known would rather run block than pass block. Because run block, you can do something about it. Pass block, you're on the defensive, so to speak. You're more aggressive in a run block. Why our guys can't run block is totally beyond me, but I was real disappointed with that. And it was not because Fred Taylor was injured. Sammy Morris was okay. He was okay. Adequate day. Lawrence Maroney, do we really need to go back there again? I'm so done with Lawrence Maroney. I don't even want to admit that he's a part of the football team any longer. I would like to have seen Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, get his shot. I thought that was one move the Patriots could have made that they didn't. Obviously, the Patriots felt like Maroney gave them a better opportunity. Wrong. Hey, Kevin Faulk would have given him a better opportunity than Lawrence Maroney. But it's all about, he's a first-round draft pick. You're giving the guy the benefit of the doubt. You don't want to be wrong about him. And they keep giving him opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, and it's not working. Okay? It's kind of like beating your head up against a brick wall. Eventually, it's going to bleed. And so we're bleeding on him. We're bleeding on the running game. That's disappointing, number one. Number two, once again, Joey Galloway. Not suited up, not eligible. Now, here's a key thing to remember about Joey Galloway, all right? He's a vested veteran, which means that his salary, once he made the opening day roster, he's good for the entire year, kids, all right? So they're not going to cut him because they have to pay him anyway. So he's not going to be a cut. But I would also argue he's not doing anybody any good sitting on the sidelines and inactive. It's time to throw his butt out there and tell him to suck it up, figure out a way to get on the same page with Brady and play, especially as a vested veteran. It's time to tell Tom Brady to suck it up. Buddy, you know what? It's great that you can go home to a trophy wife like that, but you know what? When you're here, you got to play. You can't worry about the leg. You can't worry about the knee. Move your ass, get into the pocket, and throw a strike. That's what you're paid to do. I swear on some of those overthrows, I could have gotten the ball to him. I swear I could have. Now, I'm not a pro quarterback. Didn't even play quarterback. But I just, he's putting too much on the ball because he's compensating for not putting, if he's following through properly on his left front leg, he's not making those overthrows, okay? That's just a fact of life. It's a physiological fact. And that's what bothers me more than anything, is we don't seem to have that kind of improvement. You need to stop whining about, the receivers not being where they are. Go to the receivers that you can go to. I got to tell you, the other thing that I'm going to nitpick about here today, and by the way, please join in, webradio@patriots.com is the email address, as I know many of you know, 508-543-7482. Again, that's 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number, and we can do the nitpick thing on the telephone as well. This is a Nitpick Tuesday. If you've got, problems, you've got nitpicks to talk about, this is the time to do it. This is the chance to do it, because after today, we're moving forward. No other choice but to move forward. And we'll actually start moving forward a little bit later on here in the program, but this is the day. So for those of you that are frustrated, for those of you that are mad, for those of you that are angry, for those of you that see problems, correctable, even if even incorrectable problems, uncorrectable problems, now's the time to get it off your chest, fire off the email, and let me have it. We will discuss it here. Everything's fair game as far as I'm concerned after a loss. Everything's fair game. You know, if you really feel that Tom's been spending too much time with Giselle, well, okay, then I would ask you how you know this to be true. So before you go disparaging people for something that you really don't know anything about, just make sure you know what you're talking about. It's one thing to talk football and suppose that, you know, Lawrence Maroney isn't getting the deal done and others, but to say that Tom's not getting it done because he's spending too much with his wife, that's ridiculous. I share all of your frustrations. The other big nitpick that I have, in addition to Tom being first and foremost at the top of the list today, has to be with the play calling. I don't like the play calling. It's unimaginative. It's almost boring. And it's predictable. You know, I looked at that Denver Bronco team and that offense, and I'm thinking, oh, that's Josh McDaniels. That looks like the Patriots on offense. Come on, who amongst you didn't say that if you watched the game? You know, they threw wrinkles into it. Bill Belichick got out-coached by his protege. He did. You would think that he would be ready for those wrinkles that Josh threw in there with some wrinkles of his own, and I saw nothing. No wrinkles. No nothing. Why is it, by the way, and after watching a very entertaining Monday night game last night, and you have to admit, you may not like the Jets or the Dolphins, it was an entertaining game. In fact, it was a great fourth quarter. Why are the Patriots the only team in the NFL that doesn't seem to have a wildcat package? They don't have one. Couldn't you see Kevin Falk and or Sammy Morris in that role? Maybe it's because they don't want to put Brady out on a receiver. I don't know. But, you know, there's your opportunity right there to put in Hoyer. You know, if you have to put in a quarterback. I'd love to see Falk in particular, who's done that before. You know, when the Patriots have used that, you'll recall, on short yardage situations and two-point conversions where they'll snap the ball to the up back and Brady will jump up in the air like the ball is going over his head and fake it. Why don't we see more of that? Why don't we have any of that? I watched Miami do that last night, even when Pat White wasn't in the game at quarterback. And I got to tell you, man, Ronnie Brown can get it done. Now, Ronnie Brown obviously is also, you know, either keeping the ball himself or handing off to Ricky Williams, which says something. The Patriots don't have that caliber of back. They just don't. Adequate, yes. But Brown and Williams caliber, no. And throw White into the mix, then you can understand why Miami's, you know, wildcat package is as formidable as anybody's out there. And I was thoroughly entertained by that. I wasn't upset to see the Dolphins win. Patriots still tied for the division lead now at 3-2 with the Jets. But the Dolphins now, after starting 0-3, are only a game behind. And you still got two with Miami to play. So in the overall scheme of things, is this disastrous? No, it's not disastrous. What did we talk about in here with Eric Scalavino a few weeks ago? And I think we mentioned it probably once a week. So here it is now. We're coming up on week six in the league, and I'm going to mention it again for a sixth straight week. All right, we said if this team got to 5-2 at the bye week, you'd have to think you're in pretty good shape. Okay. And I still believe that to be the case. Whereas at one point in time I didn't think so. Now I still think that's the case. If they can win these next two, which they should, although I don't think that this week against Tennessee is going to be any walkover. You know, Tennessee's 0-5. That's still a quality football team. I don't care what anybody says at 0-5. I think Kerry Collins is just showing his true self. That's part of the problem that they're having there, and they don't have Albert Haynesworth. They really miss him. But the rest of the team has got to learn how to play without him, and you hope that they don't put it together this week against the Patriots. But they are capable. And if you can win this game at home, you should be able to go out and beat a weak Tampa team in London and get to the bye week at 5-2, and you have a chance to kind of rework things a little bit and get ready for Miami coming back, and then you're going to put it out on the line against divisional opponents. And that's the way you want it. You still control your own destiny that way. So this is not devastating. This is not even really terribly hurtful other than, you know, oh, it's disappointing. It was a blown game that they should have won. We know that the Patriots, we know that Denver is not a considerably better team than the Patriots. But Denver had a lot of emotion going for it. Those players, you know, are starting to believe now on Josh McDaniels, and you know how it gets. You know, when players get that emotional ball rolling, it's very, very tough to derail. And you could see that momentum and that emotional thing kind of pick itself up around, you know, the late third quarter, and, you know, the fourth quarter was all Denver. You know, it's a very good crowd there. That's one of the best crowds in the entire NFL. It is. You know, I love our fans, but our fans don't compare to fans like Denver's. They just don't. They do things a little differently. I'm not saying that they do them better, but, well, here, a little confirmation for you. Jason, you got 2 seconds?
Of course.
You were on the sidelines, correct?
I was indeed.
What about the Denver fans impressed you the most as to what they did to support their football team?
They were loud. They needed no prompting from PA announcer, from video board, from anything to cheer and be loud for their team. The final 4 minutes of the game, before they tied it up, the entire stadium, from top to bottom in the club section in between, every single person was on their feet, stomping their feet, banging the wall, anything they could to make noise for their defense, and they were deafening loud. And the distance between their first row of seats and the benches is significantly reduced from what it is here. You could hear that crowd. I mean, I looked at our media relations person who was down on the field with me, and I go, this is ridiculous. I have never heard a venue this loud before. And they cheered at the right times. They cheered when Brady was on the field. They were dead silent when Kyle Orton was running their offense. And that, I think, contributes. I mean, you know, they get it. Their fans got the game, and that's no disrespect to our fans. I love what our fans do, and I try hard to get our fans to get into the game, as do you, John. But these guys, it didn't matter what the PA announcer was saying, what video they were showing. These guys just knew we can make a difference, we can help our team, and they took it and ran.
The most impressive part of all of that has to do with the fact that their team's fans stood, you know, like a college game. You see that in college games all the time. The fans don't sit. I realize, yeah, there are seats there, and people pay big money for the seats. But you know what? They stood. They stood when it mattered. Maybe they may not have stood the whole game, but they stood when it mattered. And they got loud when it mattered. That's what good fans do. I'm not saying ours are not, but ours are not consistent with that. You know, and I hear a lot of people, you know, yelling down in front, you know, when people stand and watch the game. And I see people turn and gesture and, you know, get people to stand up at crucial times here at Gillette. And you shouldn't have to do that. It should be automatic. We've become too complacent here. We've become too country club here. I think that's part of the problem. So, you know, if we're going to ask Tom Brady for all of his perfectness to be perfect every time out, then by God, you should be too. You should be too. Otherwise, give your tickets up to somebody who cares. Give your tickets up to somebody who, you know, will try their best to make a difference. If you want to refer to the Patriots as we or us, then do your own share of, you know, contributing. That's what I would tell you. And when you are quick to criticize, and we are criticizing, and we do nitpick around here, and I know you know that. Do a lot of that around here. Like I said, Nitpick Tuesday for a reason. We're going to pick all the nits out. We're going to get all the bad stuff out of the way here. But when you do that, be prepared to be criticized yourself. Because that's the way it works. All right, so my two big nitpicks start with Brady. And a close second, if he's one, then 1A would be play calling on offense. Because I think it's unimaginative, it's boring, it's predictable. You know, I'm not seeing, and plus when you're hamstrung with a lack of receivers, You know, you have to get creative. This team is not creative on offense. Now, I don't know if we lay that at Bill Belichick's feet or we lay that at Bill O'Brien's feet. I'm guessing not O'Brien. I mean, technically, he's not the offensive coordinator. Technically, the offensive coordinator is Bill Belichick. He's doing the play calling. So I think we have to lay that at Bill Belichick's feet. He's got to do a better job of calling plays. He'd probably be the first to admit that to you. He has to do a better job of calling plays. Patriots are not versatile enough on offense, and the running game is suffering for it. And when Brady's misfiring on some of the absolute gimmies that he has because his receivers are running the routes, he's missing them, then you got to come up with option number two. I realize that, you know, Tom's probably not the swiftest of persons, but I saw some plays last night where they rolled the pocket, you know, on Chad Henne. And I'm telling you, I love that. I mean, that's great. Little spread out. I mean, I realize Brady's not going to do a lot of that, but you know what? If you're standing on two legs and you're able to run, and you're going to be able to run, you know, for a first down if you have to, why not roll somebody? Why not roll the pocket? I think you'd shock the you know what out of the other team if you saw Brady, you know, on a sprint option pass. Good grief. Put it in the playbook. Is it utilizing, you know, his abilities to its utmost? Maybe, maybe not. But you have to throw something different in there. The team is just becoming too predictable, kids. You know, I'll give a lot of credit to Denver's defense, too, but that was still a winnable game. Patriots had 17 points, should have had 31, and I think we all know that. And plus, Gostkowski missed a field goal. I'm not blaming him in any stretch. But that's, you know, 17 points scored, and they left 17 on the sideline on Sunday. 17 points they left on the sideline on Sunday. So if they manage to score one of those touchdowns and that field goal, okay, and get 10 more points in there and win this game 27-17, hello, I believe that's the score that I predicted last week. And that's really what the score should have been. And we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. Might still be talking a little bit about the receivers and Galloway and running game sputtering or what have you, but that's what happened. We would not be having that conversation but for three missed opportunities. Brady's two passes and Gostkowski's missed field goal. That's all it took. It's a game of inches. It really is a game of inches. Sorry, I'm distracted momentarily. I'm watching on Nesson highlights of my boy, Earl Campbell. You want to see somebody crush somebody running with a football? Tyler Rose gets it done. Man, could he get it done.
He's going to get the kick out. Boom, right there.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite all-time plays is when he's running over an SMU defensive back. He stiff-arms the guy, and then he steps on him on the way to the end zone. Oh, absolutely phenomenal. He had speed and power, brute strength and grace like very few running backs have ever had in the history of football. A lot of good running backs. He's one of them. All right. Let's take a timeout here. Don't forget, webradio at patriots.com is how you reach us. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. I do have some good news to share with you. All right? Some good news to share with you coming up right here inside the playbook.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, You don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains!
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warmups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2009. Bank of America Corporation.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's good! It's good!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4.
Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Oh, you get a little funky on me now, Jace. Why can't we get some of this music in it, into the stadium? We tried this out on Sunday?
We play music like this here.
Do we?
This is a couple years old.
I heard this one, I guess, the first time about a year ago. And my
2008,
son,
you're right.
Yeah, my son was singing it. I'm like, what the hell are you saying?
I kind of played this song out when we hosted 6 high school football games here. And made the high school kids go nuts.
Well, why not? Man, we do need to get hip.
The people in Ayer, Massachusetts love this song too.
In where? Ayer, Massachusetts? Makes sense. I would think so. All right, welcome back inside the playbook for a Tuesday here. I'm John Rook. Web radio at patriots.com is how you reach us here in a Nitpick Tuesday. Before we get to some of the emails, good news for you today. 2 items. If you hadn't heard, number one, as we reported here and in many other places last week, that Junior Seau was going to return to the Patriots. Apparently that has been the case. Now, it hasn't been officially announced by the team. Haven't seen a release from the team. But the cable channel Versus, for whom Junior Seau works and does his reality show for, they've announced it in a press release. Actually, kind of bizarre that somebody other than the Patriots would actually do the announcing. Maybe this was just part of the agreement that he wanted to give a plug to Versus. I don't know. I don't know. Frankly, you know, my problem isn't with Versus anyway in my system. I have DirecTV at home. They're not carrying Versus because there's a whole, you know, issue over, you know, rights fees and, you know, payments to subscribers and everything. And I don't care. I just want to see the events. And if you're not going to give me the events, well, then screw it. I don't really care anymore. But Versus announced on their website today, says the host of Versus Sports Jobs with Junior Seau is returning to his old job. On Tuesday, linebacker Junior Seau signed with the New England Patriots, for whom he played four games last season after coming out of retirement. The quote is, "I'm very fortunate and honored to be involved with two class organizations, the New England Patriots and Versus. I want to thank the management of both for making my return to the NFL with the New England Patriots a reality." That's the quote. It was widely reported the past few days Seau was likely to return to the gridiron and suit up for the Patriots. It's no secret that the 12-time Pro Bowler is fond of New England coach Bill Belichick, the relationship with whom Seau has cited in published reports as being the reason for his return. Another factor is that, having played with the Pats last season, he's familiar with the system and is not facing a steep learning curve, or as they wrote, step learning curve, in the middle of the season. Okay, that's a real pet peeve of mine. Proofread! Thank you. So anyway, there you go. Junior Seau, according to Versus anyway, and quoted by Junior as well, is returning to the Patriots. If you hadn't heard that, Pro Football Talk had it a short while ago. ESPN Boston has been reporting that as well. And we, of course, had that last week with what's his name from ESPN now?
Mike Reese.
Not Mike Reese.
Adam Schefter?
Thank you, Adam Schefter. God, talk about going blank for a second. By the way, Adam Schefter is responsible for the other bit of good news that I have. He has a report on ESPN.com as well that says that Matt Leit's knee injury is not as serious, knee ankle injury is not as serious as we originally feared. And again, this is just according to Adam Schefter and not necessarily gospel. But Leit was spotted on crutches late yesterday afternoon here at Gillette. And apparently it looks as if, well, according to this anyway, it doesn't get into any specifics. It just says that his injury is not as bad off as once feared. I mean, from the looks of things, from the way people were going up to him after the, you know, after he got hurt, he was sitting on the bench. I saw a couple of shots of guys coming up to him and the cameras were on him. And they were like patting him on the side and patting him on the back. And I'm thinking, oh boy, that's a season ender if there ever was one, right? Apparently it's not that bad, or at least it's not season-ending bad. We'll put it that way.
I've got good news, too.
Okay.
You ready for this?
Go.
This is for all the fans who will be at the game on Sunday.
Yes.
The New England Patriots cheerleaders,
mm-hmm.
will be wearing Halloween costumes
for
this game.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, hot. Want to touch the hiney.
Oh, yeah. Very good. That's always my favorite game of the year is when the Patriots cheerleaders wear the Halloween costumes. Who's going to be the nurse? Who's going to be the one in the Catholic school uniform?
Easy.
I know. Oh,
we'll
baby.
Take a break. John Rook needs a moment.
I need a moment to gather myself here. So anyway, all right. So you'll have that to look forward to on Sunday. I'll have my binoculars out. Sorry, Jason.
I thought that was to help you with play-by-play.
No. Jason, I'm sorry. I can't get to that spot. I'm too busy staring. In fact, I'll have people probably trying to fight me for the binoculars this week in the booth. Oh, gotta have some fun, guys. Gotta have some fun, no question. All right, so there's two bits of good news, at the very least, having to do with the team in terms of Junior Seau and Matt Leit. And we can only hope that, again, Leit is back sooner than later. Like I said, I thought the offensive line did a pretty doggone good job. I really thought that they were more than just effective. I thought they had a good game. It wasn't them. It wasn't their fault that this team lost. Just wasn't. There were many, many other factors. And why don't we go ahead then and jump into some of those. By the way, Brian Lowe from Patriots Today and Fantasy Lowdown. He's going to join us in the second hour of the program today, and we'll get some of his take on what transpired at Invesco Field at Mile High as well on Sunday. And we'll give you some insight from somebody who is actually on the field, and we'll see if we can't kind of wrap that up just a little bit, huh? All right, this one comes from Dave from Rhode Island. Dave from Rhode Island says, to me, the Patriots are the most boring team of the NFL. I watch a lot of football, and almost every other game I watch, I see other teams make plays, and I say, wow, I do not get that when I watch the Patriots. Their defense sucks. This bend-but-don't-break mentality sucks. Defensive backs giving 10-yard cushion on receivers and giving up big plays, just letting them catch the ball and run missing tackles. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can tackle better or throw the ball better than what the Patriots do. Woo. All right, Dave. I'm sick and tired of the inconsistency. I blame Bill Belichick as well. He has lost his genius mentality as far as scheming on defense. He lets go of all of the players that actually did something. Mike Vrabel, Asante Samuel, Lawyer Malloy. No, that one's old, but he was a playmaker in my eyes anyway. Don't even get me started with the offense. I mean, come on, man. Galloway and Edelman, or however the hell I spell his name, as your number three? Running the ball on third and one or two with one back in the backfield. What the hell is that? I'll tell you what, if they do not start playing better, I'm going to become a Lions fan, laugh out loud. Okay. Dave is obviously very passionate about the Patriots. And Dave, I appreciate your passion. I'm sure the Lions would love to have you as a fan. Now, here's the thing. Obviously, they let go of players that did something because they were obviously getting a little bit older. They were commanding large salaries. And the Patriots felt like, you know, for the salary they were paying, they probably needed a little bit more return or better return. They didn't think they were going to get that return. So they opted to let the player go. That was a business decision. I mean, you know, everybody accuses, you know, the Celtics of going in the tank because they didn't get rid of the big three quick enough. You know, back in the days when it was, you know, Larry and Kevin and Chief. But at the same time, had they done that, then we might have actually had another championship or two before, you know, year before last. All I'm saying is that you have to know when to let go of a marketable commodity. That was part of the reason behind the thought process on letting, you know, Richard Seymour go. Now, frankly, I think that they let Richard Seymour go one year too early. I know he's not doing anything with Oakland, but would you do anything with Oakland right now, considering the mess that that franchise is in? Probably not. I don't even think, who could make a difference in Oakland right now? Could any one player in the NFL make a difference in Oakland? No. I don't even think Peyton Manning could make a difference in Oakland right now. It'd be very hard for him to do that. So the fact remains is that, I will believe this until the day this season is over. And the only way that I will ever agree that it wasn't a factor is if, like Fred says, this team goes on and wins the Super Bowl, then I will finally agree, okay, Richard Seymour being let go is not a factor. I still think it will be a factor before all is said and done. Granted, I don't think that that was a factor on Sunday's loss. I didn't see the kind of pass rush that I think that we would like to see, but they weren't doing any blitzing either. Problem with it was a contained defense. You know, they're trying to rush with four. And the only time that they really made any kind of, the only time that I saw that they made Kyle Orton sweat at all is when we saw Tully Bantakane in the game, you know, as an extra rusher, when they finally decided to put some heat on the guy. You know, the front four really didn't do much rushing. They did okay stuff in the run from time to time. I would agree that the defensive backs were way soft on the receivers. I think that's a good point, Dave. I'm not sure what kind of defensive philosophy this team was in. But you can't allow a guy like Kyle Orton, who's a solid quarterback, but I said this last week about him, and I'll say it now, he's more of a game manager. He's not a game changer. And yet he changed the game because the Patriots' defense allowed him to change it. He was too comfortable. You can't make people comfortable in this game anymore. You must blitz, and you must blitz heavily. Or at least have a blitz package. I mean, come on. Do we have one? Have we seen one this year? I haven't seen one. Have you? If you've seen one, please let me know when that was. Maybe I was busy looking at the cheerleaders. I don't know. But I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen it yet. I'd love to see a blitz package coming from somewhere, anywhere. Put some pressure on those guys. Kyle Orton was too comfortable on Sunday. And that was a huge difference in the game. Especially, I mean, come on, two 90-yard drives? I mean, please, that should never happen, ever. But to have it twice in one game, well, that's reason enough for the Patriots' defense to be embarrassed. A 90 and a 98-yard drive, please. That's embarrassing. That should never, ever happen. That being said, they still had a chance to win that game. But they didn't because of the faults of the offense and the faults of Tom Brady, period. Okay, let's go to next question. Tim from Chicopee here. Hi, Tim. As a relocated Patriots fan being from Colorado, whenever the Pats play the Broncos, it is one of the games that I circle on my calendar. And it hurts more to lose to the Donkeys than it hurts to lose to Satan Manning and the Colts or the Jets. Not much to nitpick about, but, he says, is it just me? Not much to nitpick about? It seems like everybody's nitpicking here. All right, he says, is it just me or is Brian Dawkins one of the dirtiest players in the NFL? I personally think he should be fined for the hit he laid on Wes Welker when Welker hurt his back or whatever it was that he hurt. Yeah, that was a sort of a spear into the kidney area in his back, if you'll recall, and that did come from Brian Dawkins, and it was a helmet right in the soft part of his back. I agree, that was a lousy hit. And had the official seen that or been smart enough to call it, he could have called spearing. Probably should have. I don't know that Dawkins I would call dirty. I'd say Dawkins is opportunistic. I wouldn't put Dawkins in the Rodney Harrison mold of defensive backs. But I would say Dawkins is also one of those guys that you probably would love to have on your team. But if you don't have him on your team, you hate his guts. He's just a good, tough, hard-nosed player that is on the downside of his career. But it looks like he's got another year or two left, and Denver guessed right when they picked him up. All right, Tim says, the taunting penalty towards the end of the game. How can the ref call that penalty when he threw the flag before Merriweather even threw his hands in the air? That has to be, and that's a great point, Tim, because that was another nitpick that I had, and obviously that nitpick is with the officiating crew. And to be honest with you, the flag was well out of the guy's pocket before Merriweather ever turned and taunted. Now, granted, Merriweather's got to know better. If he's going to be a leader, yes, I know he's emotional, but if he's going to be a leader in this defense, as we've all anointed him, he has to have more poise than that. Okay, that one's definitely in Brandon. But why is the flag coming out of the guy's pocket before the taunt ever happens? So, see, taunting really should not have been the call there. And if I'm the Patriots, I'm going to Mike Pereira and I'm going to the NFL and I'm asking for an explanation on this. Where was the taunt? When did it occur? And if it wasn't a taunt, then what was the penalty? I'm asking for explanation. I hope the Patriots do that this week because, frankly, that was a call that was a flag that should have been picked up. The official was bailed out by Brandon Merriweather on that play. Bailed out. Whereas we'd be screaming and yelling at that official if Brandon had not done anything. And we'd be demanding for his removal from, you know, that officiating crew, or at least a suspension for an egregious error. That official was bailed out because Brandon did his little, you know, sack dance. Can't do that. So it's almost a moot point because of what Merriweather did, even though the flag was technically thrown before, you know, the little dance was done. But if I am the Patriots, that's one thing, you know, if you're paying attention to detail, that's one thing that you're looking at this week, and you're asking for an explanation from the National Football League. Because they need one. They need to understand where that's coming from. Because that was a bad call. Last thing, Tim says, the commentators were calling the Broncos' version of the Wildcat offense wild horses. Do you think that had a psychological effect on our defense? By the way, wild horses? What kind of name is that? Should have called it the Jackass. Okay. Yeah, no kidding. No, I don't think it has a psychological effect on our defense. I think our defense knows, you know, that, you know, whenever they see, you know, the quarterback split out, that, you know, something, you know, fishy's coming, they ought to know what's coming. You know that Miami's going to run the play in a few weeks when they get here. They're going to run it. It's going to happen. So they ought to be prepared for it. They ought to know how to defense it. You know, this is the offense du jour. This is the version of the early stages version of West Coast / spread offense. You know, I mean, all things are cyclical in life, and you know, this will probably. I had somebody say the other day they don't think the Wildcat's gonna take off. That they think it's just a passing fad. That it's really not going to stick around for any stretch. But you know what? If the Dolphins keep running it like they run it, then teams are eventually going to have to game plan for it, and they're going to have to put in some kind of a wildcat package of their own. And if you'll notice, watch a lot of games, okay? A lot of teams, not everybody I don't think yet, but a lot of teams do have, you know, anywhere from 3 to 6 plays or more in a single wing formation. And by that I mean a direct snap to a running back or to a wide receiver / X receiver / / player, kind of like you remember what's his name used to be for Pittsburgh? Okay, brain dead now. Anyway, and Miami drafted to that by, you know, holding on to a guy like Pat White, who was a quarterback at West Virginia. But, you know, he wasn't necessarily drafted as a quarterback. He was drafted as a multi-purpose player. You may see more and more teams look for somebody like that that could come in and run that kind of an offense. I think that's conceivable. I'd love to see the Patriots run some kind of a play like that. I don't know that they have the imagination to do that. I think we have to have something happen because...
Sounds like a challenge.
Well, you know, you got to get imaginative, and you're getting too predictable, and that's part of the problem. And maybe part of the reason why Brady's struggling like he is. This one comes from John. No, it's not John. He signs it Mitch instead. The email says John. This is Mitch down at the bottom. Okay, good. I sent a couple of comments about being short of personnel, maybe being short at quarterback too. What if Tom did get hurt? Where would that leave us? Really, think it through. Well, as I said earlier, Mitch, Hoyer would be in there, but then you'd see, you know, the waiver wire being searched and, you know, who knows? Who knows? Might call for Jeff Garcia. He's available now, I think. Pass rush. It has been non-existent since tossing Mike V in the deal with Castle. And all the freaking linebackers, outside linebackers, et cetera, in the draft. Well, great. Look at our impenetrable backfield. I'm just concerned a bit. I will go down with a ship. I bleed red, white, and blue. But I still do not understand why it would be taboo to give a guy a rest and throw in a backup. But we do not even have that, really. Well, okay. It's not taboo, Mitch. Really, do you think that the Patriots will do better? First of all, let me explain something to you if you've never played football before. Okay, football is a game of rhythm. It's a game of momentum. And so you have to allow a quarterback sometimes to play enough to where he gains a rhythm or momentum. And that means handing off the ball, running with the ball, especially throwing the ball. Then you have to leave him in long enough because if you put him in for one play, yank him, put it back in, yank him, put it back in, yank him. Or you put him in for two or three, then yank him for another one of them, put it back in for two more. There's no rhythm there, okay? It's stop, start, stop, start. You follow me there? All right. Even a guy like Brady, who seems to be eminently capable, unless you're going to completely do something wildly different, like run the Wildcat, okay? He needs to be in the flow of the offense. That helps him understand what's coming at him better. It helps him anticipate defensive formations better. Helps him read those defenses better. So if you're putting, first of all, talent alone, do you really think Brian Hoyer is a better option than Tom Brady at any point in time? I think even Brian Hoyer, as much as he would want to play, I think even he would call you a dummy for that one. Brady, I realize, is still not there. And I opened up the program with this. We all hope that we continue to see more improvement sooner rather than later. It's not that it's taboo. It's just that, really, you don't have another better option. You just don't. All right, he says, see what happens after being 2 games into the second half, Indy and then Miami. I'm the first guy in line to meet our old friend Tom Terrific, still one of the greatest, if not the greatest quarterback to ever play the game. Okay, you say that, and yet you want him to come out for Brian Hoyer, who is a free agent, wasn't even drafted. and you want him to get meaningful time in a game. What if he doesn't do well? Then people are going to say, well, why the hell did you stick Hoyer in there and take Brady out? It's not taboo. It just doesn't make sense. And then Mitch says, we're going into the sixth game. How long will we wait for Brady? I'm not sure I can answer that one either, unfortunately. I think we're all still waiting. And I think, we'll probably wait all season long. I guess that's the most frustrating part of this entire escapade, is that we're all still waiting. And, you know, like I said earlier, I think we can see small signs, but it's not quick enough for us. There are only two bad throws as opposed to three bad throws the previous week, and they still managed to win the game. So maybe this next week against Tennessee, only one bad throw. You only have to hope, though, that that one bad throw isn't the difference between winning and losing a football game. We said there were going to be growing pains. We said that Brady was going to take some time for him to come all the way back. It's taking that time. So we didn't lie to anybody. We didn't pull the wool, or at least try to pull the wool over anybody. Our expectations exceeded reality when it came to considering Tom Brady's comeback from his knee injury. Face it, that's a fact. We need to put that aside and move on and see if we can find a way to get Tom back a little bit closer every week. Yes, it's very frustrating. But I think we can also combine that with the fact that you need a little more imagination on offense. You need a better effort on offense. You need a better effort on defense. You need a better effort from the coaching staff. It's not often that you get a chance to say that pupil schooled the teacher, but I clearly thought Sunday was that case. Pupil not only schooled the teacher, he outright beat the teacher. And that doesn't happen often. And I hope that kind of pisses Bill Belichick off. We'll see how he bounces back and how this team bounces back this week against Tennessee. Like I said, that won't be a gimme. Even that team 0-5, that's a wounded team. That's a team that won 13 games a year ago. They're missing two key components, but they're not that far off from being a good football team. That's what worries me the most about this next week. All right, we're going to sneak in another break. Webradio at Patriots.com. It's still a nitpick Tuesday, so if you haven't had your chance to have your 2 cents worth on the problems facing the New England Patriots, offense, defense, Tom Brady, play calling, blocking, tackling, coverage, blitzing, whatever, okay? Now's the time to get it all out on the table. Anything else that we need to nitpick here today? Anything else? Am I missing something? Webradio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the number right here in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. my rules.
Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains!
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football, bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warmups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards, first down.
But you're not...
Keep the change, patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2009. Bank of America Corporation.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
We had to wait for that sweet emotion part to come in there. So. Welcome back inside the playbook, hour number two.
That's
here.
That's how you're running the show today, off of emotion.
It's true. It's true. See how you like John Jason reads my mind? I like to have that song. That'd be good music to put underneath. We could do like a loop of that when we introduce the team on Sundays, you know, something along those lines.
As opposed to Crazy Train?
I realize everybody likes Crazy Train, but I think it's time to start kicking something else into gear. Just try it, you know? I mean, find something else that, you know, brings out emotion like that. I think people would dig the rock and roll thing here. You don't think so? After all, the Broncos, by the way, I still heard Gary Glitter, you know, Rock and Roll Part 2 out there. They still use that one. This one? Yeah, this would be okay. Because this is what the players do, right? They dance to this one, like, in the third quarter.
Or whenever I choose to play it.
That's right. But they always dance to it. So, see, this kind of gets them going.
They played this in Denver at the start of every defensive series.
And I saw their players dancing to it, too.
I saw our players dancing to it, too.
Hey, music's music.
Brandon Merriweather.
Yeah? Well, that's fine. Whatever gets them going. I just wish it would have done some good on Sunday. That would have been nice, huh? Oh, goodness. Brian Lowe will be here shortly. We want to continue with your emails at webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482, the telephone number. Keith in Dallas, Texas, sends his email. Says, I don't feel bad about the loss because it gives us more to work on as a team earlier in the year. Okay. Also, we lost to Josh McDaniels, a guy that knew our offense and defense knew our offense and defense in and out, which was evident by all the shifting Denver was doing on both offense and defense. Okay, I'm following you. Although I would also tell you that Belichick certainly should have known what, you know, Josh McDaniels was going to do. Sometimes we didn't seem to have a clue defensively what their receivers were going to do, and that was what was, I guess, most disappointing to me about the defensive effort. Backs were way too soft, way too soft. I really feel that we do need a balanced run game, but let's be serious. The Pats are a pass-happy team, and I think the coaching staff is putting too much focus on running the ball where it's starting to affect the game in the fourth quarter. An example, running the ball and going three and out on our last offensive drive in the Baltimore game. All right. Nitpick, Tom Brady's inability to hit Moss wide open down the field is starting to be a big concern. That may be the understatement of the day, of the week, of the season. Bill Belichick and his coaching staff seem like they gave Josh McDaniels too much respect and let that affect the play calling, which was very conservative from my point of view. Example, defense played like the Patriots of old, where they were allowed to the dink and dunk passes to beat them up the field to get in the red zone. Okay, I don't understand that. All right. Okay, Keith, I think I follow you, though. That's actually a good way of terming it. They almost did give a guy like McDaniels and that staff a little too much credit. I don't know if respect is the proper word to use, but yeah, I just think that they didn't show any wrinkles, okay? We spent all last week leading into this game talking about expecting to see new wrinkles on both sides of the ball. Everybody assumed, we all assumed, even the folks that we talked to, Vic Carucci from NFL.com and the guys from Denver, you know, that were on the program last week, we all talked about wrinkles, and that was the exciting part of anticipating the matchup. Looking at, you know, the master take on the pupil again, and who was going to out, you know, wrinkle the other one. Well, saw plenty from Josh. Saw nothing from Coach Belichick. Zero. Nothing. Keith also writes, also, I'm not sold on Denver being 5-0 just for the simple fact that they knew our playbook in and out, and their defense was not a factor in this game, as when we shot ourselves in the foot with the Brady miscues. I would be more convinced when they beat the Chargers in San Diego next week. Judging by Denver's schedule, they may go either 9-7 or 8-8, which may be enough to get them in the playoffs if San Diego does not turn it around, which I think they will. Well, geez, Denver's 5-0. Gosh, you know, if they go 8-8, that's an abysmal failure. You know, then again, there were some teams. There were some prognosticators before the season thought that this Denver team might go 3-13 this year. Nobody really gave Denver much of a chance at all. And yet now they're 5-0, and San Diego's looking up at them. I will agree with you that Denver's 5-0 looks a heck of a lot better if they go on the road and win in San Diego against a divisional opponent. I'll agree with you, especially against the team that was perceived to be the divisional front runner before this season got started. I would definitely agree with you there, Keith. You know, did they know our playbook in and out? Well, You know, how much do they really know? I think he knows schemes. I think he knows philosophies. Do they know the playbook? Well, they probably treated this similarly to how they did, you know, how they did things against, you know, the Jets. And maybe this is part of the reason why it's a little alarming right now to me. Because, you know, against the Jets, knowing that Kevin O'Connell was just a fresh cut and the Jets had picked him up, they changed their play calling and, you know, they had the grease boards out and they had the wrist flaps and all that kind of stuff. And they had the same stuff for Denver, largely because of the noise factor. But you can't help but think that things have changed somewhat systematically since Josh McDaniels left, because they knew they were going to have to face him again. So some of the terminology's probably changed. So I don't know that they knew our playbook in and out. I would also argue the Patriots should have known what Denver's playbook was going to be. I mean, after all, Bill Belichick taught him basically almost everything he knows. So I think that's a wash. What I wanted to see was boldness. What I wanted to see was some guts. What I wanted to see was somebody taking a shot, taking a chance. Throwing in something that you go, oh, I didn't expect that. And we saw that from Denver. We didn't see that from New England. That's really what it boils down to. So if you want to nitpick, I think that's a pretty good-sized one right there. I think that's an effective nitpick overall. Brian Lowe is in the house, ladies and gentlemen.
Just picking nits today, huh?
Oh, there's, you can imagine.
That's every Tuesday, but boy.
There's a lot of them to pick. All right,
where
so,
do you start, huh?
Yeah, so were you were down on the sideline?
You know, I was up in the press box.
Oh, I was down
on the sideline, right, though, or sort of in one of the field tunnels down the stretch of the fourth quarter and the overtime. So actually, I probably didn't have as good a look at a lot of what was going on as I would have if I was still upstairs. But, yeah, I was around.
Well, you know, I just got through mentioning to Jason a little bit in the last hour about the crowd and how noisy it was and how they do a pretty good job. You know, good fans there. But, I mean, to me, your overall, you know, first of all, yes, I want your overall impression of, you know, what you thought the Patriots were lacking on Sunday. But I'm left with an overwhelming sense of disappointment, not so much in the effort put forth, because I think we all realize that Brady is still a work in progress in coming back. And, yes, he still missed two wide open touchdowns that had he completed those passes, we would not be having these conversations right now. I'm just disappointed in the fact that they didn't seem as prepared as I thought they should be against a Josh McDaniels coach team. They were out-coached, they were out-prepared, they were out-executed.
And signs of that came early on. You know, they called a timeout pretty early because, you know, the Broncos were lining up in their Wildcat, or actually Wild Horse.
Wild Horse.
One of the PR guys from Denver actually was coming through the press box saying that they were calling it the Wild Horse, which I guess makes sense. But back to the point, they had to call a timeout pretty early on because they clearly didn't have a defensive look that they would have wanted if they knew that the Wild Horse formation would be so prevalent, which it really was throughout the game, but really in that first drive. And give Josh McDaniels a ton of credit for coming out, even though it wasn't like they had overwhelming success. But the point was, they kept the Patriots' defense off balance and had them ill prepared. You know, they found a hole, they found a weakness, and I think that was something that was definitely you give credit to the Broncos for. And then you know, I just thought that they were lacking a lot of bite offensively, actually on both sides of the ball. And whether that came down to lack of preparation or execution, it's hard to say, because I just thought the execution was just so poor. And what was disappointing is that. And I'm with you on Brady coming back, and I never expected to be game one or game two. I thought by games 5, 6, 7 we'd see it. And what kind of was disappointing was that it seemed like there was a step back this week.
It did.
Against Atlanta and against Baltimore, while it wasn't flawless, there were certainly signs that this team and this offense was starting to be able to produce offensively the way that they had been a couple years ago. Yeah. And to take a step back is troubling. Now, even in their heyday, the Patriots have struggled against the Broncos, especially in Denver. Now, if they want to get to where they hope to be this year, there's a good chance they might have to go back to Denver. You've got to be able to beat this team on the road. And so that's what's troubling. But, you know, if there's any silver lining, and there's not much of one, they have two losses and by combined 10 points, both on the road, which is, you know, okay, even good teams might lose, you know, tight games on the road. But if you want to be elite, you're going to have to win some of these. And there aren't too many signs that this team has what it takes to beat these elite teams on the road right now.
Not right now. It doesn't look like it.
No.
You know, it's kind of like the same troubles that the Red Sox had winning on the road this year.
Yeah.
Good
you know,
team.
Good point.
Good team, but they couldn't win on the road.
Good point. Yet on Sunday.
And you're not a championship team unless you can win on the road.
Right. On Sunday, the Red Sox had trouble winning at home, closing out at home. But that is true. And I'm still willing to be patient on the offense rounding into shape. But taking steps back in week five, I don't think is what observers really want to see or really thought they would see. So another good thing is that they have two teams that with combined 0-10 records coming up these next 2 weeks before the bye. And what better way to go into your bye with some momentum than to iron out all the kinks against these two teams and come out with some big wins, which, you know, a lot of teams have been able to do. But on the other side of it, you know, you figure Tennessee and Tampa are going to.
I'm not convinced that Tennessee is a true 0-5 team. You know,
no.
I realize that Kerry Collins is proving to be the, you know, Kerry Collins we all thought he was, and I realize that they really miss Albert Haynesworth, but you know, I'm not sure that I don't understand why the rest of the team isn't following suit.
I agree that they're not a real 0-5 team, but I also feel as though, and again, this is a Jeff Fisher coach team. I'm sure they're not going to quit, but they're 0-5 and 0-3 in their division. That is pretty much hopeless. I mean, there is really virtually no hope for this Tennessee team. The question is, do they come out with some pride and with the mindset of we have nothing to lose, so let's go out there and, you know, play all out and try to win some games? Or is this the type of team, and I don't know the answer, is this the type of team that is going to be like, screw it, you know, we're done, let's just go through the motion through the rest of the season? We'll find out on Sunday, because this is the first, you know, when they were 0-4 going into the Indy game, if they beat the Colts, then you could say, all right, hey, you know, that's a building, a stepping stone. They're probably not going to make the playoffs, but you can't say all hope is lost. Once they lost to Indianapolis in such an embarrassing fashion, I think all hope is lost with them. So it will be interesting to see what kind of mindset Tennessee comes out with. And then Tampa the following week, I think, I'm sure that's a team that is trying, but that's a terrible team right now, and that shouldn't be on paper a team that the Patriots have to worry much about. But, you know, as Bill Belichick already said in his Monday press conference about Tennessee, that's a pretty good football team. So we'll see how they come out.
Stripper sends a pretty good note.
And he says, always.
And he says, when will we see Edelman throw the ball in a reverse situation or a quick bubble screen and pass?
If Tom Brady can't hit all these guys, what makes you think Julian Edelman will?
Well, what I'm saying here, though, is I was making the argument in the opening hour of the program here that the Patriots are one of the few teams now that don't seem to have some sort of a Wildcat-type package.
Mm-hmm.
Edelman is the perfect guy to run that. I mean, you know, we mentioned, you know, that they've run it in short yardage, goal line, and even, you know, two-point conversion situations with a direct snap to a guy like Falk, because we've seen that happen before. So if not Falk, why not Edelman? Why not allow him to take some snaps back there, even though I know they didn't draft him as a quarterback?
Well, for all we know, they're building towards that. I mean, for all we know, they are working towards that, and in practices they're doing it, and they're just finding just the right time or just the right game. And, you know, you're right. You see some of the game last night, Miami and the Jets.
I loved that fourth quarter. What a great fourth quarter. Awesome. Awesome end of the game.
And the way that those teams – I mean, Miami obviously is the – for lack of a better term, the originator of all this Wildcat stuff. The Jets have Brad Smith. Just about, you're right. Just about every team has the capability or has shown it once or twice here or there. And the Patriots haven't. And it's a great sort of talking point on whether or not they have the capability of doing it and if it's something they're working towards. Maybe they truly are and they're just trying to perfect it and figure out the right game and the right time to bring it out. And I guess Julian Edelman would be the obvious.
Last Sunday would have been a good time because we saw all kinds of wrinkles from Josh.
Nothing from the Patriots. No, there weren't any wrinkles.
And that was one of the most disappointing things about the whole day.
Yeah, not a lot of wrinkles and not a struggle for the Patriots to, you know, to overcome and react to the Denver wrinkles.
Yeah. Let's see. What else do we have here? This one comes from. Oh, it's not even signed here. Oh, Nick. All right. Nick says, it comes down to balance. I think that the business model philosophy that the Pats have and the reliance on a system, as in can plug anyone in, has to be executed with balance. Case in point, one more year with Seymour, et cetera. Whereas the Vinatieri move was sound, but the Samuel move was questionable. Coaching across the board seems to be at the root of our problems, from lack of imagination and play design calling, as you've stated, to the inability to sharpen execution, to managing Brady back to, well, being Brady. Even what seems to be good about the Pats' play seems to feel transitory. Well, that's entering a new word into the... into
Patriots
the
playbook lexicon.
Playbook lexicon, exactly. If Bill Belichick is as good as most of us believe he is, then he needs to take a good long look at his part in this dismal situation our team finds itself in. It's good to be 3-2 and dismal, right?
Yeah, a lot of teams, there's some bad teams out there that would love to have the Patriots' problems.
I, like you, hope that the Denver loss motivates Bill Belichick to get off autopilot and draw some energy into this team. Bill Belichick is the spark. Nick is 110% correct. You know, it all has to start from top. The guys take their cue from the coach. If the coach is motivated, you know, I realize that a lot of guys are self-motivated on this team and have been for a long time. But if the coach seems particularly animated and into it, I think the players follow suit.
And you know what? I agree with all that. And what's interesting is that, you know, Belichick is the head coach, and that's where they take all their cues. You do wonder how much of a loss. Maybe Josh McDaniels was more of a loss to this team and this offense and this quarterback than we ever thought, and maybe more of a loss than what Charlie Weiss was, or maybe he was more of a loss to the offense than what Mangini was to the defense back a few years ago. And when you look at the makeup of the Patriots coaching staff, one thing that strikes me every year, and I'm not saying I necessarily read anything into this, but what is striking is that the Patriots have a smaller coaching staff than a lot of other teams. They also, I think, have a younger coaching staff than a lot of other teams. You know, coaches who are similar age to the players, and you wonder, you know, they don't have the NFL experience that I think a lot of other collective team coaches have. You wonder if that sort of catches up to them, if there's anything into that. But I think maybe this was a front and center example of, you know, maybe Josh McDaniels was a far bigger loss to the cohesion of this offense.
I'm beginning to think that that's the case.
And I think Bill O'Brien is a pretty sharp guy, and a lot of the players do rave about him and speak highly of him.
But it's still, the bottom line is the play calling is Belichick's responsibility.
Yeah, there's no offensive coordinator in name. I mean, players do allude to Bill O'Brien being the coordinator without saying coordinator, but you know, the calling the plays and the really getting down into the game calling and the game plan. I mean, yeah, that's Belichick, that's Brady. A lot of that is right there. So, but I think, you know, the coaching, I mean, this was not a good coaching day for the Patriots, I guess.
No,
it's fair to say.
It was not a good coaching day. I would agree. The pupil outcoached the teacher in this one. Todd sends a message. He says, the Denver schedule, looking at it, Denver is going to have a minimum 10 wins. Good teams shouldn't have to throw in dangerous yet creative wrinkles in a game. Look at Indy, just winning with great execution and precise quarterback play. I trust that Brady will get better, and if he makes two passes, we're saying what a great game he had. Any fan that writes in and blames Brady or Belichick needs to have their head examined. We lost a road game by 3 points in overtime. One bad thing I took from that game was, and I used to blame Ellis Hobbs for playing 15 yards off the receivers, and I thought he was terrible. Now I've learned he was playing the defense apparently Bill Belichick was calling.
That it does seem to be a common theme out of Dean Pease and Bill Belichick.
I don't like
very aggressive.
They're very soft on the corners. Yeah. They really are. And I just you know, this is not a blitz defense at all. We haven't seen a blitz package yet this year.
There's not much, and they bring in a guy like Derek Burgess, and it seems like maybe
they're trying to rush with four, but they're not doing that. Yeah. I mean, how about a wrinkle here, guys?
Yeah,
it's too predictable.
It is.
It's way too predictable.
Yeah, I think it's fair to blame specific players or specific coaches, in this case maybe Brady, for this game. I don't think anyone's writing off Tom Brady and saying they better draft a first-round quarterback next year or they better try to trade for someone else because this season is going down the tubes. But I think this was, you know, this in both road games this year, as the Patriots have lost, they have scored a combined 0 points in the second half. And the quarterback is going to take some of the blame for that, and deservedly so. I don't think he takes 100%. I don't think he deserves 100%. But he's overthrowing guys, and he's throwing passes that usually connect with players, and some of the same players that he's connected with in the past. So there's blame to go around, but Tom Brady gets some of it for this week, and I think it's fair.
He gets most of it, I think, for this week.
And I think it's fair. And I'm not, you know, that's just this game. I'm not saying he gets blamed for every game that they have lost this year and in the future. But in this particular case, a lot of it goes to him. And Denver, there's something about when that schedule says, hey, let's go to Denver, that just doesn't really seem to connect with this team.
Stripper sends me another message. He says, okay, let it begin. OU is going to kick Texas butt Saturday. Boomer Sooner. Well, you know, I'm going to let my talking happen on the field.
What position are you playing?
Left fan.
Left end of bench.
Left end of the bench.
What time is that game on?
It's a noon Eastern time kickoff on Saturday.
Will you be there?
Good, so you'll be able to be back here for the Revolution game that night.
Yes, I will. I was actually getting worried. If it was a 3:30 game, I was going to call in sick. Just let you know that right now.
That's all right. Your backup is sitting right next to you.
Okay, I'm calling in sick on Saturday.
Are you going to that game Saturday?
No. Okay. I'd love to go. Okay. Believe me, I would absolutely love to go. I don't think I'd be able to fly back in time.
No. I was thinking, you know, the Revolution game slipped my mind. I was thinking you got to get here in time for 4:15 on Sunday, but I guess they're more pressing.
I'd be back in time for that.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Definitely. All right. Fat Pat says, John, I agree with you completely on the offensive play calling. It seems like whatever time of defense they face, it's the same spread it out, one man in motion, nothing else predictable stuff we're running now. That old dusty playbook could use some Wildcat if you ask me. Not only Edelman could be back, but how about using a guy like Maroney to take a direct snap? I know it's the screw Maroney time of the year, but I still think he could be used if the offense somehow figures out how to put him in space. That's actually a good point. That's mm-hmm. what he needs. He needs space.
Well, on kickoff returns, which I guess you could say is a version of carrying the ball in space. You know, not so much this year, but in the past he's had some success.
Maybe not exactly Wildcat, but something. Maroney is a slot guy, not a back. Anyway, that's just what I believe. I'm dying to see something, anything different. Even if it doesn't work, just something to make opposing coaches worry about besides the same old. Can we please stop with the officiating call for taunting? I mentioned it earlier. There were two flags thrown on that play. The first one was for pass interference, then another one thrown for taunting. First one was picked up because the pass was tipped. So apparently, you know, we can't see where the official was looking. So my guess is he saw the pass interference through the flag right before the taunting started happening.
Yes. That first flag, I believe, was thrown before the taunting. And then, you know, I mean, the taunting one to me was deserved. I mean, that one was deserved. And
should not have been the umpire that actually, nor would have been the back judge that would have called it.
The taunting, yeah.
The taunting. He should not have had, he didn't have that call. He had to be calling the interference call as opposed to the taunting call.
Right. Now, the interference one, I guess that was thrown before the taunt. That is correct. It was not I'm predicting a taunt here, I'm going to throw a flag. It was the flag came before the taunt. But then they only officially called the taunt.
Right.
So that one I thought was deserved, and the pass interference call picking up, I'm not sure about.
Was tipped. So, you know, technically the pass is tipped, it's not pass interference.
That's not a blanket rule, is it? I mean,
if it's tipped at the line of scrimmage, the players have a right to go after the ball. They have a right to go after the ball.
Okay, you're right.
So that's why I'm saying it. In effect, it doesn't make sense then if the referee, unless somebody else saw it was tipped and the back judge didn't see it was tipped, he's throwing that flag before the taunt occurs. So the question comes into play, what was that official throwing his flag for?
That's a good point.
Was
he throwing his flag
for the interference that he thought he saw, or was he throwing it for the taunt that hadn't yet happened?
Well, if he threw the flag for the interference that he thought he saw, and then the refs gathered and said, well, the pass was tipped, let's pick that one up, then that's fine. That's the way it should be. A guy sees something, one ref sees something, then the other refs say, nope, here's what actually happened, and they pick it up and they move on. But then the taunt came right afterwards, and I thought that was a fair penalty and one that Merriweather deserved.
Let's see. Andy, I know that there are many changes from the 2007 Wonder Year, but do you agree that the main thing we're missing is a second deep threat to support Moss? By the way, all of the bandwagon fans, go jump onto the Jets.
Well,
Jets could probably use you today, too. I'm sure they're smarting a little bit from last night.
Right.
We're missing a second
deep
threat.
Yeah, they are. Exactly,
absolutely,
they are. And 2 years ago, they had Dante Stallworth. And this year, they thought maybe they'd have Joey Galloway, who would... they figured and they thought and they hoped would be a dynamic presence and sort of keep these guys interchangeable. But Galloway certainly in his career has had long ball threat, obviously, and they don't have that. And that is a glaring hole. I think the depth of the wide receiver, certainly it's top heavy. Moss and Welker, when they're at their best, are two of the best in the league and certainly the best tandem. But then there's a gaping drop off that I think this team is struggling to overcome. You know, Aiken and Edelman being your third and fourth wideouts, that's just not going to cut it. It's not going to cut it going forward. We're seeing that. But the question is, are Moss and Welker good enough to overcome the lack of depth the rest of the way at wide receiver? And so far the answer is no. And the question is there anything in with Galloway that is going to be able to they'll be able to use this year, or you know, are they going to have to make do with what they have? That's a question that's not yet answered. But signs don't look good for them having that other deep threat. I agree. They could use another deep threat to help take the pressure off Moss, but so far nothing there.
All right, this one comes from Eric, who says, I was at the Broncos game with my dad, like me, a lifelong Pats fan. Perfectly planned throwback weekend, or so I thought. It started with breakfast with Babe Parilli in South Denver, near where he lives now. And as fans may know, he was on the Broncos coaching staff for a number of years. Now his allegiance lies with the Broncos, not with the Pats.
Thanks, Babe. Hang around for a little while.
But he was in the booth on game day with Geno, as you heard there. So it was interesting to hear his perspective on the game and how it's changed. He also came armed with a signed golf ball and photographs from my dad, who used to watch Babe and the rest of the old school Pats practice at Phillips Academy in North Andover. He never played in Sullivan Foxborough Stadium. I find that kind of interesting.
Wow.
But when you consider when the stadium was built, not a surprise.
Yeah.
All right, he says, then there was the game. It was just astounding to see live just how poorly the Pats played on both sides of the ball. I mean, truly astonishing. In the second quarter, even the Broncos fans all around us knew they were going to win. And they said to my dad and I, it's not the Broncos' defense. The Pats' offense is incompetent. And they were right. You guys have already noted how uninspired Brady looked. You should have seen him on the sideline. It's time someone, like Belichick, sat Brady down, looked him in the eye, and told him to do his job. The honeymoon is over. Brady needs to be treated like everyone else. He can't keep forcing the ball to Welker. We do have other receivers, and he needs to start using them. He looks scared in the pocket now. Why do we start Aiken if we're not always going to use him? And Moss has always been double covered. In 2007, they were the greatest passing tandem in history. What, Moss wasn't double-covered then? Like that's something new this year? Come on. Brady used to throw it to him and let Moss use his phenomenal body control to go get the ball. Now Brady is too scared. Two 90-plus yard drives on defense. It was horrible. Orton went through our defense like a warm knife through butter. Our defense is what we thought it was, too young and too soft. Game plan from now on is against our D will be the short passing game. That was a pathetic performance, one of the worst I've ever seen. Thank God we get to play the Titans and Bucks. At least we'll have two more wins this season. I'm disgusted. Eric is pretty disgusted. He's writing this from San Francisco, and he flew in with his dad to go see the game, and he's disgusted.
He's disgusted. Well, you know, you pay some money, you work out the logistics, and go see a game, and that's the outcome. Some overreaction there. I don't, listen. I've said from the beginning, Brady has not looked like Brady so far. I'm still willing to be a little more patient. What troubles me, you know, the last 2 weeks, I don't think we would have heard this email. There is a reason to have to be disappointed with how Brady and how the Patriots played on Sunday against Denver. And there are some recurring themes here in that Brady doesn't look himself. But I think we're overreacting if we're going just based on this game. Brady looks scared. He's not doing his job. Belichick has to sit him down. We need more time to evaluate that. And I think there have been signs these last 2 weeks before Denver, the previous 2 weeks, things were coming along a little bit. There was starting to be a little bit of rhythm. It's troubling. There's some troubling trends. Road games, crunch time, second half play, lack of execution. That can't continue. Simply can't continue. But to say that Tom Brady is not doing his job and needs a lecture from the coaching staff, way too early to say that. Absolutely way too early to say that. And I just think, yeah, football is the type of game, more so than baseball, where week to week we're going to be nitpicking like you are on this show every week and evaluating that game. But we need to give it a little more time. Let's see how these trends, if these trends continue, if they can buck these trends. I think if the Patriots win the next two games and Tom Brady is still only ordinary, we're going to be okay. People are going to feel okay.
Well, I did say that at the top of the show, Brian. I did say that one of the things that we talked about, and we've talked about each week now over the last 5 weeks leading up to this, was the fact that, you know, would you take 5-2 at the break?
Yeah.
And I think the general consensus was, yeah, considering the way everything started, yeah, you'd take 5-2 at the break, you'd have a week off, and then you really get to dig in and you got to prove your mettle from there.
And you know what? What if the Patriots defense, which I agree didn't have its greatest performance on Sunday, you know, recovered a fumble, like NoSean Moreno fumbled late in the fourth quarter. What if they recovered a fumble like that, scored a touchdown, and won the game? We'd be thinking, obviously, obviously we'd be thinking a lot different about this game, about the direction of the season, and we'd be spending far less time on Tom Brady and how inept the offense was in the second half. Things are going to come around. I still think for the offense, Peyton Manning is the example. Is the example we've heard a lot last year. He had an injury. Preseason, he comes back slow, and the Colts win 10 games or 11 straight games or whatever it was after starting 3-4, whatever it was, 2-3, whatever it was.
Right.
And that's a good example just because Peyton Manning and Tom Brady are those 1-2 icons of QBs this decade, and that's a fresh memory from last year. This did not look good. This was not a good offensive performance. We've got to be a little more patient here.
I got to tell you, I disagree with that last emailer. I mean, I was standing right behind the team bench, and after that drive where Tom and Wes were clearly not on the same page, you could see Brady on the sideline warming up and loosening up for the next offensive series, and just looking at him, he had this look in his eyes that he was pissed, and he was going to go out there and he was going to march the team down the field. It was a look that, you know, normally from where I am on game day or watching the game on TV, you don't see this, but like you could see that he wanted to go out there and just drive the ball down the field. And I'm looking at the person standing next to me going, here comes a touchdown drive. And I couldn't have been more wrong.
Right. But. Well, and that's and what's interesting is that that is the look that I think Tom Brady always gets when things aren't going well, but there's still a chance to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
And 9 times out of 10, he succeeds in those. I mean, that's what Tom Brady's all about, going back to, obviously, Super Bowl 36. He's all about those crunch time moments and performing well. He absolutely didn't get it done this week. And, you know, I mean, he got strip sacked. That was their last, their last opportunity there. You know, what if he doesn't get strip sacked there? Maybe they still do lead that, Logan Mankins got beaten on that one-on-one play with Vonnie Holiday, and Vonnie Holiday gets to Brady, knocks the ball away, and I'm pretty sure. I mean, that was the Patriots offense didn't see the ball again in that game because if that play doesn't happen and they're able to keep moving a little bit, maybe they do get into field goal range. Because it wasn't like they didn't get into field goal range in the second half. Steven Gostkowski missed. You know, let's talk about that. I mean, they got it to the 3-yard line. What did he miss? A 40-yarder. They got into scoring range. And that's one thing where this team, we talked a lot early in the season, the first couple weeks of the season, where their red zone offense was terrible, but yet they were still one of, if not the only NFL team to score points in every red zone trip. I think up until, that might still be the case, actually. Did they get it? I don't think they got into the red zone without scoring on Sunday. I think each time they were in the red zone, they scored. I could be wrong, but they've still done well. They've scored points of some sort every time they've been in the red zone. And Tom Brady did get the Patriots to the 22-yard line where Steven Gostkowski missed. Now, they should get further. They were terrible on third down. But they had a chance right there where they could have had a 10-point lead instead of a 7-point lead down the stretch there. So, that's something that shouldn't be overlooked. Let's not overreact to this one game. Denver is a team that the Patriots always struggle against, except for last year when they came here, and there were some other circumstances, I think, in that game. I think it would be if the Patriots were to meet the Denver Broncos in Denver in January, on the one hand, I think everyone would be happy the Patriots get that far. But on the other hand, then we'll have to say, wow, they're going to struggle because they always struggle in Denver. But let's see what they can do in some other road games this year, some other teams that they play, and see if, before we overreact to this one loss, if this game becomes a trend or if they can sort of reverse some of these trends.
Hey, I'm watching the Jets-Dolphins game last night. I'm thinking the Patriots have trouble with both of those teams.
Right. Well, it's too bad they didn't get Miami from their perspective. At the time that they get Miami, and they play Miami twice in a four-week span, I think, in November, It could be that that's right when Miami is hitting its stride, which could turn out to be a... They're coming on now. But, some of that is just team momentum and when they hit on your schedule. On the other hand, maybe the next time they hit the Jets will be in a little bit of a downwards trend. So that might even out. But Miami is a scary team. And if Chad Henne, we talk about Tom Brady
He looked pretty good last
week. Looked pretty good. And while I didn't see really any of their game last week, it seemed like it was one of those games where who'd they play last week? They won. Henne had a very, modest stats, but they beat Can't think of who they beat. And it seemed like, with just looking at the stats, it seemed like it might have been one of those types of games like Tom Brady in 2001. Like, for instance, that game against the Colts he had in 2001 when he didn't have too many good stats at all, but the team wins by 30 because the defense does well in special teams and Brady just doesn't make a lot of mistakes. I think Chad Henne could be that type of quarterback. A lot of experience in college, and you know, maybe he can manage that team well. And if he has five or six games under his belt by the time the Patriots meet Miami, you know, that could be a tough one. That could be a scary opponent, no question.
Well, my computer's frozen here, so I can't answer your question.
Well, hey, Jason will.
Bills.
Oh, it's the Bills.
I take it all back. I take it all back.
Good one.
No.
All right, Nathan from South Carolina. He says from S. Carol, California. It's Southern California, not South California. He doesn't even know. All right. What a frustrating win for the Broncos. I really thought we had that one until we got the penalty on 3rd and 30. Then I had a feeling we were in trouble. No kidding. It felt like the Jets game last year, or maybe more like the Colts game, where we had the game in the bag, but a penalty put the opposing offense back in it to score and win the game. I'd be interested to see how we bounce back against the Titans, but the first three games after the bye, we were up for a real challenge. Jets, Dolphins, Saints. Assuming that we beat the Titans and Bucks, how do you think we'll approach any of those three games after the bye?
Their toughest stretch of the season comes November 8th. Through December, I think it's 1st, where
correct.
They play, I don't know if I have the order right, he might have had the order, Miami, Indy, New Orleans, I think New Orleans is the last one of that stretch, Miami, Indy, Miami, New Orleans, and the Jets.
Jets,
Five games in that November 8th through December 1st,
correct.
That is clearly their most difficult stretch. December, on paper, is a cakewalk. I don't expect it to be a quick cakewalk, but on paper, that's when they have Jacksonville, Buffalo,
Carolina,
Houston, but that November stretch going right to Thanksgiving is going to be make or break. And you know, I don't know. Three of those games are on the road. Indy's on the road. Miami's on the road. New Orleans is on the road. I mean, you're talking about New Orleans and Indy, two of the elite teams in the NFL, in their house on prime time, at night, two high powered offenses. A very frightening stretch for the Patriots, and they're going to need that bye week. Boy, are they ever going to need that bye week. And if they don't win the next two games, or if they go 1-1, if they don't win them both, I don't think they're going to get much time off in the bye week. I don't think they're going to get too much time off in the bye week because they're going to need it, and if they lose one of these games, they will be struggling.
Henry says, obviously disappointed to lose, but what another prime example of our hysterical reactionary fans. Mm-hmm. Brady's done. Use the first-round pick on a quarterback. I can't stand our fans.
Colt McCoy?
Yeah.
What do you think? Colt McCoy coming here next year?
He could back him up. Bar 2007, Brady has never been a great thrower of the deep ball. He should be making some throws he's missing. I just don't think it's an apocalyptic revelation he has developed. I feel we still need to incorporate more single-back sets with Brady under center and not back in the shotgun as often as we are. As the offense is still a bit jittery and not in sync, I believe we need to go more conventional as a means to both gain more control and open up the areas we do generally so well in, like the shotgun draw plays with Falk and Welker screens, etc. Other than the Falcons game, we have yet to control a game, in my opinion. I appreciate the argument for doing 1,000 passes a game as it's utilizing your best player, but I'm still concerned the scheme may be getting stale. Your opinions, please. I'm really interested to see what you guys think. All right.
Well, I think there's something to that. But, you know, as far as controlling the game, I don't know if I agree. I think that up until this game, they really had dominated the time of possession, which to me is a sign of doing well on third down, moving the ball well, and the defense doing well as well. This was a game where they certainly did not control really anything as far as the flow of the game. But I think against both Baltimore and Atlanta, you know, even going back to Buffalo at times, you know, they did control. I think they were setting the tone a little bit. It's these road games. And, even last week, Bill Belichick in his press conference, when talking about going to Denver and all that, even he said after just one, they had only played one road game, he said, you know, we're trying to go out there and you know, we want to get our first road win of the year, as if they were 0-7 on the road.
Right.
This is something that I think even leading up to Buffalo, leading into the Denver game, was sort of on their radar screen as a goal, for lack of a better word. They want to win a road game. And I've got to imagine that losing this Denver game in the way that they did is going to cause some doubt in their mind as to how well they can perform on the road. Now, their next road game, quote-unquote, is a road game for both teams in London. That one, both because it's in London, a completely different feel to it, and Tampa Bay being a one of the worst teams in the league, will not be a great barometer for how this team plays on the road. November will. So I don't even remember what the question here was as I get on this little road rant. What was it?
Now, hold on. Let me find it again.
But either
way,
you know.
No, he just wanted to know that he's concerned the scheme is getting stale.
Right.
The overall scheme. And I've said already several times today, it's very unimaginative. And
yeah.
The fact is that there needs to be some variation in it because the offense is becoming too predictable, which is not helping Brady. Because if it's predictable and he's missing, okay, that's as far as I'm concerned, that's a double whammy.
Right, and that's right. What he mentioned was they're not controlling some of these games.
Right.
And I think
controlling
that the two games
like they should be.
Right, and I think the two games that they certainly had not controlled the game were these two road games.
Yes.
And so maybe there's something there, but I do think that there's got to be a spark. And that's the easy way to the non-X's and O's way to put it. They need a spark. And we've been talking about Wildcat. We've been talking about Julian Edelman. We've been talking about who's a deep threat. I don't know where they're going to get that spark, but it is something that they're lacking. But I don't think there's a general they're not controlling the game sort of phenomenon or trend going on here other than the road games.
All right, Nick sends this response. And he says, Brian, you're all wet. He says, with all due respect, do you think that if we won the game by a field goal or a recovered fumble, that's Brian all wet, by the way,
yeah,
Nick.
Yeah, there you go.
That somehow all the poor playing would be wiped from our memory. We are fans, win or lose, we can good play versus luck. We can, I guess, decide between good play and luck. Says, come on, somebody, call Brian out on this.
Well, he just did. No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that in some ways, yeah, when they win a game, regardless of how they win a game, yeah, we are still nitpicking on Tuesdays, and rightfully so. But if Steven Gostkowski hit that field goal, we're not talking about 0 points in the second half. We're not talking about the inept offense. We will have said, well, you know what? Tom Brady did lead a late third quarter drive into field goal range where they got 3 points that extended a lead to 10. And then even if Denver had scored scored in the fourth quarter to cut it to 3, then maybe they don't get into field goal range, when they needed to, and the Patriots do win. And no question, we'd still be saying, wow, that was a lackluster offensive performance, but we'd probably be saying a little more, you know what? That was one road game against a team that always gives the Patriots fits, and it's a team whose defense had been playing like one of the best in the league. And not all problems would have been glossed over, but some of them would. Some of these numbers that we're looking at would have been looked at differently. And still, Tom Brady after the game would be talking about how disappointed he was in not being able to connect with Welker a lot and Moss. And they'd have to fix some of those problems. And whether they won this game or not, they'd still be saying that, and they'd all be true. But if they did win this game, if Steven Gostkowski hit that field goal, or if the defense had come up with a different stop and somehow they won the game, whether it was because of Tom Brady's arm or not, we would be looking at this differently. We would still acknowledge that there are problems, but we would be looking at this differently.
I'm not the brightest guy in the world.
Every week. That comes up every week. And I'm not the brightest guy in the world. Thanks, Jason.
You need him to, like, re-record that or something?
No, I think I said it well.
Okay.
I think I said it well the first time.
Here's some more frustration from Dave in Pennsylvania. Tom Brady lost this game. He was the worst player on the field. Brady had all day to throw all game long, and he didn't hit the broadside of the barn. 7 points were given away when Randy Moss was wide open in the end zone, and a fan in the stands was closer to catching it than Moss was. Then Welker went right up the middle, an easy pitch and catch, all that was needed for a long touchdown late in the game, and Brady thought the back of Welker's legs were
however,
where his hands were. Yes. This team should be 5-0 right now. On a scale of 1 to 10, the entire Patriots team is a strong 7. Brady is a weak 5. He says he needs to get his act together and fast because I believe this year's team has everything it needs to win the Super Bowl and should win the Super Bowl. I am more, and I mean way more pissed off at this Broncos loss than the Jets loss. The Broncos suck. I stand by that. They suck. Thank you, Tom Brady, for playing like Kyle Orton does every day in one of the most important games of the year. By the way, they did make Orton look rather comfortable defensively.
Oh, yes. Orton, career day.
Yeah.
On that Wes Welker play,
yeah, yes.
Is there more?
There is, but it's fine.
It should be noted, if it hadn't yet, that Wes Welker took blame for that play. Wes Welker, now, you would think that Brady and Welker would still be seeing the same sorts of things and that Brady maybe would see what Welker saw. But Welker acknowledged that at that moment in the game, he acknowledged after the game, the most important element on that play was get the first down. He ran a route that was getting the first down, and where that ball was thrown, Welker even admitted, that was where he was supposed to be. He sort of freelanced a little bit on that, and he saw what I'm sure Brady saw in film. He saw that if he catches the ball at that point where he was, not where the ball was, that's probably a touchdown. But Welker took some blame for that. Welker took the blame for that play. That should be noted. That should be noted. That wasn't all on Brady. That was also on Welker, and that could have changed the complexion of the game as well.
Well, could
one
have.
Way or another, though.
Could have, but I know that
right. One way or another.
What Welker's response to, you know, that throw was, you know, he threw his hands up in the air like, oh my God, you know, like, so, I mean, you had to assume that the ball was not exactly, you know, where it should have been.
No. And that being said, one way or another, what we keep on hearing, what we've heard a lot over the last 48 hours is everyone's not in sync, miscommunication on offense, 11 players not all on the same page, and that's got to change.
No question. Todd sends this note. He says, do you think that Seau can play outside linebacker, or is he strictly inside? I'm hoping Seau can play the Vrabel role, setting the edge and letting AD get up the field and putting pressure on the quarterback. And, of course, if you hadn't heard, we mentioned it earlier in the program, versus the cable network, of which Junior Seau has been employed with his reality show, announced today that Seau is coming back, although the Patriots have yet to release it officially. Versus has said that Seau is coming back and is signed with the Patriots.
Right.
Seau's an inside guy. I don't know that I see him in the role like Vrabel was, setting the edge and coming
first of
outside.
All, he won't be an every down guy.
No.
Second of all, he'll be an inside guy with a similar, if not an exact, role that he had last year. Last year he came in when Teddy Bruschi, he came in before Teddy Bruschi got hurt. When did Teddy Bruschi get hurt? No, whatever it was. He came in and played a handful of series,
of
downs
here
and there.
Right. That's right.
And
Bruschi. Yeah.
And he played inside with Gerard Mayo. They're not looking for too much exotic out of Junior Seau. He will not play outside. He will not play a Mike Vrabel role. He will play a situational third. You know, he will play a few snaps here and there. I don't think we should look at him as a savior, but I do think he could be an important element of this team that is lacking a lot of the defensive leadership and defensive wherewithal and tackling, sure tackling ability that seems to be lacking right now.
All right, we've been nitpicking obviously all day, and certainly with good reason. I did want to bring in three positives out of the equation, just so in a weak attempt of trying to balance the effort here, because we've been hammering the Patriots all day long today. And I usually try to do this on Tuesdays when we spend time nitpicking. There are some superlatives. There are some things of note, significant things of note, maybe even records that might have passed fans by, especially in the disappointment over losing the game on Sunday. Number one, Randy Moss had his first career interception.
And that was Kyle Orton's first interception of the year.
Of the year, yes.
Yeah.
But
Randy Moss has the same number.
That was his first catch of the day.
One of only two.
Yeah. So, you know, but he did. They do put him in there in that deep, you know, prevent defense, and he managed to pick it off. So
ask Eric Scalavino this. When I saw Randy Moss in there as that play was before that play, so he's going to intercept the ball.
You said that?
I did.
No,
ask
stop
Eric,
telling lies.
Ask
you,
Eric
you are an habitual liar.
Ask that guy.
Okay, I will. Gerard Mayo made his return on the field, much to my surprise and I think to many other people's surprise.
It's surprising looking back at the Buffalo game that he came back this soon, but he practiced since the previous Friday. He had practiced, I don't know about in full, but he had been out there and didn't seem to be too limited, came in as questionable. Come Sunday, I wasn't all that surprised, although in looking at it broadly, I was surprised he came back in 4 weeks.
Finished the game with a total of 6 tackles overall.
And a forced fumble.
Yeah, so there's nothing wrong with that. The other thing I guess that we should probably mention, Steve Gostkowski did hit a career high with the 53-yarder he had. Now, obviously he did miss a 40-yarder, but then again, you know, the Broncos also missed a field goal too, so it really was a wash there, but he did make a 53-yarder.
Yep, he did, and that was a good, definitely a good kick, but, you know.
I'm not sure I can come up with much more than that.
Not much more. Why even try at this point?
Okay.
Let's turn the page.
I think we should turn the page.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's coming up on Patriots Today?
Talking about a lot of the same stuff we're talking about here, the offensive problems and looking at some of Brady's comments from after the game. You know, we're also a few other news and number kind of things like that. And also, there was an event here during the game, Game with the Greats, Patriots alumni, including Steve Grogan, Steve Nelson, Andre Tippett, were here for a great event, really one of the better events that the Patriots Alumni Club puts together, watching the game with some of these Hall of Famers. So taking a look at that as well.
Very good. Very good. And, of course, you'll be back with the Fantasy Lowdown on Thursday.
Back in 48 hours from right now with the Fantasy Lowdown.
Perfect. All right. Thanks, Tomorrow's playbook. We'll focus certainly squarely on the Tennessee Titans coming in. Jim Wyatt, who covers the Titans for the Tennessean, will join us. Frank Wycheck, former H-back tight end extraordinaire for the Titans. He's now the radio analyst on the Titans Radio Network, and he will join us in the program tomorrow, along with Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. So same Pats time, same Pats channel. Cheer up, Pats fans. There's another game right around the corner. Chance for a do-over is coming up soon.